Hello, Cor and Jack. Welcome to the Rhizone Studio. And I think welcome to beautiful British Columbia for both of you as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
First time in the province?
It is the first time.
Or in the country?
No, in Canada I was before, but the first time in BC.
Okay. Yeah,
first time out west.
Out west. Awesome. Yeah. Well, welcome. So just by way of introduction for our listeners, I have two guests in studio today. I have Cor Bremmer from the Netherlands, and you're in charge of commercial sales, right, Cor?
Yes.
And I have Jack Ford from... You're the United States, Midwest?
Yep.
Midwest.
Cleveland area.
Cleveland area. And you're in charge of North American sales. So I think you mentioned you're very on the technical side of the sales. So, so Cor, just by way of introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from both professionally and personally, and how did you land here at Erfgood?
I was born in Gouda, and my parents had a nursery, shrubs, conifers, in a little village close to Gouda. And I worked there since I was 10 up to my 20th during studies, and I liked it to work in the nursery. And I did a bachelor degree in horticulture, and my first job was working for Shell, doing tests with chemicals for pesticide, for fungus and diseases in horticulture.
Like Shell, the petroleum company?
The petroleum company, yeah. They sold that part, but at that time, they were active in agriculture as well. After 2 years I worked there, my dad asked me to help him and to organize the nursery a bit better. And I did that for 2 years. And after that, I went to Deliflor, the cut flower chrysanthemum company, as a salesman and a growth advisor. And after 7 years, in 2000, I moved to Florima Young Plants, that's a company in Aalsmeer area, and I became finally a director of that company. And that company was bought by Beacon Plants, and Beacon Plants was also the owner of Deliflor. I knew them from that time, and I came more or less back to where I started years ago, and I was their commercial director for 13 years. So all my life in horticulture, I was born there and I did it all my life. And why to Erfgood? I worked there for 13 years at Beacon Camp in the same role. And I thought when I have to do another 13 years, it's probably a bit boring for the people and probably a bit boring for myself. So I wanted to have a new challenge. And my former classmate from primary school, Peter Voss, approached me if I was interested for a job at Erfgood. So, and finally I said yes. So that's where it started at Erfgood.
So you've been at Erfgood now for how long?
Half a year.
Okay, so 6 months. So, and you're again in commercial sales. So what, or commercial commercial director, you say?
Yeah.
What does a commercial director do?
So I'm responsible for the sales, for the marketing, for product development, and also the department where we make calculations for the offers for the customers.
So really in the channel of servicing the customer,
showing
them with their technical side, their sales side, and also the marketing side of things.
Yes, yeah, the whole picture.
Okay, and so you've moved, just out of curiosity, how's the transition from working with plants to working with concrete and gravel?
Yeah, a lot of people predicted that I would regret my step, not working in young plants any longer and not longer in breeding. But to be honest, I appreciate what I do because we serve the same customer as before. I'm interested in nurseries, how they are operated, and organizations and innovation, and that is still the same. And I have a lot of colleagues around me who inform me about the technical parts. So I'm not too much technical. I am more from the plant side. And I add value for them having more knowledge about the plants. So I feel really at home and comfortable what I do now.
And for most of our listeners, Erfgood, they may or may not know what that does, but we'll get into that in a minute, exactly the technical and what Erfgood actually, how they help growers and things like that. So Jack, your story, just
over. So very much like Cor, I grew up in the industry, grew up in the family business in Southern New Jersey. And my family was heavily into the florist side and also a chain of Hallmark stores. And a good portion of the business was also field cut flowers. So grew up underfoot in that and took a real liking to the plant side of the business. And after schooling, went on to become a commercial grower. Left the family business for a while and worked for a perennial grower in Pennsylvania, and then moved on to Yoder Brothers for a number of years. Came back to the family business, and unfortunately the family business is no longer. And at that point I moved on to sales, and that was about the early 2000s. And since then I've been working in sales and consulting with growers across all North America, with the previous to Earthgood here recently, and spent the last 10 years working with agronomics, focused on the production automation side of the world in horticulture.
And when you say agronomics, do you mean like the automation of the greenhouses and stuff, or like robots, or like what part of that?
Agronomics? Production automation, so okay. Potting equipment, and material handling equipment, and all that, everything that goes along with that, everything you folks are doing here, so... The camera grading, all that type of imagery. And then I've been with Earthgrid for about 18 months now, heading up North America sales.
Yeah. What prompted the move from the agronomics into, which I guess another form of agronomics, but the Earthgrid system?
Pretty much there, it was time for change. The pandemic definitely changed the world of how people interacted and so forth. And I wanted to be out working with growers more, interacting with growers and consulting more. And my role changed to being more office bound. And wanted to be out working with the growers.
So that's your position now. You're interacting with the growers, the customers of Earthgood, essentially.
Yeah, doing a lot of promotion.
So before I jump to Earthgood, interesting, what had you not staying with your family business?
That's a good question.
Sorry for being
curious. It is a good question. First of all, I learned that the world is a bit bigger than just a small nursery. And I was interested in a larger world. And I thought when I'm a business owner, I should focus on that. And as I was interested in a bigger world, I saw it a lot with growers who were interested in other things than their own business. They started to do a lot of things around it, but they failed to operate their own nursery well. So I thought that is something what is giving a conflict. So and my younger brother was interested, so that was not difficult for me to go to another company.
Yeah. So it's not like you were leaving the family and the business in a lurch, and you said, hey, I want to get that multinational experience or that larger experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Earthgood. So Earthgood is a company that works, I guess it used to be called Earthgood Flood Floor Systems. Maybe now it's just branded as Earthgood, I believe.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the different segments of the businesses that you do, but maybe just whoever, I know you're in the Netherlands where the company is based, is how did the business start and where did it come from? And
It started in 1958 by Mr. de Jong. And that's the founder of the company, and he did just the simple groundwork for growers. So the story is that he first asked the grower to pay him, then he could afford to buy a spade, and that's how it started. Later on, they did more and more work for growers, and also in sport fields, and that's where the Earthgood floor was born. In the sports industry, to make a tennis court very leveled and with the gravel on top of it. So that's Hugo Paans, who is now the CEO of the company. He invented the idea to use it also to grow plants on.
So maybe not to segue too much into the technical details, but so what is that Earthgood floor? How is it made up? Just describe it for me for a minute.
Just shortly, we close the floor with a liner. And that's 100% leveled. And then on top of that...
So that's the natural ground is closed?
The natural ground is closed. And then we have a layer of stones, like 5-6 centimeters, 2 inches. And then we have some protecting cloth and a ground cover on top of that. That is a very
basic and basic floor. So it's basically some kind of a liner, ground cover, stuff of rocks, aggregate, and then a protective layer with another ground cover on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was born in the sports industry. So how did that transition into growing plants?
It was just, Hugo was very interested in growing healthy plants and to give them the plants water, but also to drain out the water and to give every plant the same amount of water, the same amount of nutrition. And when you compare the earth good floor to other systems, you see the differences that in most systems, the plants don't get the same amount of water at the same period of time and not the same nutrition. And also with draining out the water, that's quite unique that the water is drained out of the pot due to gravity.
Yeah.
And so you have not too much water in the pot and not too much water around the pot.
And
so,
because you're controlling the floor with aggregate, and I assume there must be pipes in that aggregate too nowadays, and we'll talk about that more, that uniformly all the pots are draining as well. You don't have a low spot, which might drain a little slower than a high spot.
That's the uniformity is the key word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's how it kind of started. And like where did this start in the Netherlands? I think it started in the Netherlands, right?
Yeah. It was only in the Netherlands until 2013.
Okay. So recent.
Yeah. So, at that time there was a crisis. It was a little earlier, 2008, 2009, there was a crisis. And so Hugo was talking with the people, so we have to consider what to do. Shall we make the company smaller or try to expand and find customers outside of Holland? And they choose all to go and find customers outside of Holland. So he went to tour around the world, to France, to Germany, to Brazil, to Canada, and mainly to find the Dutch immigrants. And as you know, as you are in, you will find Dutch immigrants everywhere on the world. So that was a good step. And the people in the company were willing to go with Hugo and find their work outside of Holland.
So he intentionally set out, let's go find the Dutch diaspora, if you will. Let's all across the world.
Yeah.
And they're found in the horticulture industry, which is true for sure. So and when you talked about the crisis, you're talking about the 2008 global recession, like the global economy crisis, right? The big market, housing market crash and such. So they chose pretty boldly to expand at that point rather than and get smaller.
Yeah.
Interesting. And where did that lead to? How successful was that?
That was very successful, to be honest. Making Canada is our biggest market, bigger than Holland even.
So you said you went to Brazil and all that, but yet Canada ended up being one of your big ones.
Yeah, it's the biggest market for us at this moment. Yeah.
And so how many countries are you functioning in right now?
We have in 26 countries a floor. So it's not that we are in all countries always active, and sometimes one hit. But yes, we are all over the globe.
Wow. And so do you then run that all from the Netherlands, or do you, because Jack, obviously you're in the US, so do you have offices in 26 countries or in some of those countries, or how do you set up?
Yeah, we have offices in Holland, but also in Canada, in Ontario. We have an own subsidiary, and also in Brazil.
Okay, so three offices
in
26 countries.
Yeah.
So is there, in terms of that expansion, is that, like you said, is Canada not larger than the Netherlands in terms of customers, or is it like you still have the most customers in the Netherlands?
No, the number wise, we have the most customers in the Netherlands, but the volume wise, the big companies, the big customers are in Canada.
Okay. And how about the penetration into like the United States, as in like the whole North America?
I think that Jack can answer that question better.
So we definitely have projects and installations in North America or the U.S. We're not as well known in the U.S. as we are in Canada. So that's what I'm focused on, is bringing that to market and working with the American growers or U.S. growers to help develop that market.
Are you still targeting just the Dutch growers, or?
Actually, no. So one of the reasons I was brought on board was to reach out to that next level of grower beyond the Dutch connected grower. And there's nothing wrong with the Dutch connected grower, but you know, it's for lack of a better term, translating it to the American grower and showing them how to use it.
Like, do you have competitors in this market? Like, I'm just kind of curious as much as you can share about that.
So competitor-wise, in the actual floor product, not necessarily. Our competitor probably is the other products on the market, such as concrete, crushed stone, landscape fabric, or what other benches, that other surfaces that our folks are using for greenhouses. But as far as a direct competitor, no.
Okay. So, and I think I might have asked you this in when we chatted before as well, if there was several of the key areas or the products like you just referred to, maybe that's a good segue, is what are the areas or the industries or the technologies that Earthgood really focuses on? Like, I think you said there was two or three of them.
Yep. So as Cor mentioned, and we talked about already, is the actual floors and the floor surfaces. And we have three levels of floor surfaces that we work with. But we also offer all the water technology around those floors, and that includes the pumps, the tanks, and systems to supply the water to the floors and back and forth, and also overhead irrigation and irrigation systems. But then there's the third phase, which you've actually kind of always done but have never really labeled. And I've been calling that water mitigation and looking at the whole overall operation and how operation deals with water from the time it falls from the sky to runoff or is recycled back into the irrigation system.
Okay. So you talked about the actual floors, the flood floors or the floors.
Yep.
Then there's the water systems that interact with those floors or not. I guess in some way they do, especially with the water side. And then there's the water mitigation, which is looking at the overall water plan on the entire site. So do you sell those always together? Or can I just say, I just want the floor, I don't need the water mitigation piece, or is that not work that way?
No, it's definitely a la carte. So it's what fits the grower at that time. And a lot of growers, we like to make a plan. So let's start with what makes sense, what the low-hanging fruit is and where the ROI is, and then build off of that.
So when we're talking about the floor, do you go back in and add piping later, or how does that work? It's not like modules that you can just fit into each other. How does that work?
So pretty much, depending on the type of floor you get from us, our top floor, our excellent floor, has the irrigation incorporated into it, the ebb and flood. So in that case, yes, you would have the irrigation system incorporated into it, and that would be sold as part of that package.
So there needs to be some foresight and some, you know, planning, pre-planning, some thinking ahead of, do I want this in the future? Because once the floor is in, I imagine it's not that simple to just add irrigation later.
We have to think ahead. But then I should also add that if you have a current ebb and flood system, we can incorporate that into our floors. So, you know, we try to use what the growers have on hand already, incorporate that into the system so that they're not double spending.
So if someone will have a pre-existing floor that's not an Earthgood floor, you will incorporate that into your design?
Yes, we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's just dive into those three pieces a little bit, just about why would I even do this? So Corey, you talked about the uniformity of the plants draining and you talked about growing healthy plants. So why a floor and not just lay some ground cloth down and grow plants?
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure there's a host of issues and I don't, or benefits, but I don't know them. So yeah.
As Cor mentioned, the ultimate goal was to have very uniform crops. And when you say uniformity, is that we're excellent sell through. So the goal is to get your loss or your non-sellables below 5%, ideally down 1-2%. With that in place, that's one of the biggest benefits of the floor. And the way we accomplish that, as Cor mentioned, is that we're every plant or every pot is getting water at the same time. The way that the water comes up through our floor, it breaks through the surface so that every pot is seeing that water. And then at the same time, as we're draining that floor, the waters are being removed from the pots all at the same time. Or if you look at a typical admin flood, the pot closest to the hole is getting water first, and it's also the last one that has water, where the pot furthest away from the hole is getting water last and also loses water first. So very even watering.
So even on a just comparison from one flood floor to another, that alone already has benefits there.
Yeah.
And what other benefits do I have of, like, is there any diseases or any weed beneficials? Like, what are other benefits that I get?
So the other part of the way that the floor interacts with the pots is that as we come up and fill the pot with water and then it drains back down, is that we actually kind of pull the water back through the pot. So we open up the air porosity in the soil. So you get benefit from that, of getting air back to the roots, okay?
Rather than it just sitting there and then evaporating up, is that?
Evaporating up, or in comparison, if we were on a cement floor, you would pick up the pot and there'll be a little puddle of water underneath the pot. When you pick up a pot off of our floor, there'll not be a puddle under it.
And that goes, how does that help?
Goes right to your disease, okay? So that goes back to where we're eliminating that disease contact there.
So that disease is pooling in that water, basically. And so by removing the water, it doesn't have a place to throw.
We're eliminating that factor.
Yeah.
That factor. Okay. We're not saying that there's disease there, but we're eliminating that vector that where disease can be transferred.
Okay. And so does your flood floor also, and again, pardon my ignorance, I'm sure that some of our listeners will know this, but does that, with that water that you're feeding, do you also incorporate, is that part of the water system then, or do you say that's part of the floor? Like, the water system is all the pumps and everything, or is the piping part of your water system as well?
The basically any of the piping from in the floor is part of the floor. The break point would be then there's the water system, which is all the pumps and the plumbing to get the water to the floor and remove the water from the floor. So that's the water system, and that would include the tanks and also the fertigation equipment to inject the fertilizer.
Yeah, and I have a question about fertigation, but I'll do that in a sec. I just want to just touch on the floor again. So when you're using the floor, you're like you said, you're fertigating. But what other, in terms of, you're doing overhead sprinklers, but you're also doing ebb and is all of that water getting collected and back? Where does it go? How does that all work?
Yep. So you can definitely do overhead irrigation. A lot of growers do use our floors with overhead irrigation. And yes, any excess water that is not going into the soil is getting collected by the floor and returned to wherever you would like it to go.
In most cases, reservoirs.
Going to a reservoir, to a tank. If it does have fertigation, back to a fertigation tank so that it can be reclaimed and reused.
Okay. Yeah. And can I just drive on these floors with regular forklifts and skid steers and other things, or how does that work?
So the surface is solid. I say solid, but not hard like cement. So I kind of say it's like asphalt on a hot summer day. It has a little give to it as you walk on it. So the kind of rules are is that as long as it's a pneumatic tire, you can drive on the floors. Ideally is to pull straight in and back out, not to do a lot of turning on the floor.
Like asphalt.
Yep, exactly. But any hard casters or hard solid tires, you definitely don't want to take onto our floors. And we have some products to help with that.
So when you're just looking at the floors, and I don't know who's best answer that question, do you have like some ROI, like return on investment calculations? Because I can imagine this is not cheap to be putting acres and acres of this in. Is there some ballpark numbers, ROI, or even cost that?
So ROI is yes, there's definitely ROI. The first thing to look at is that the floor itself, in comparison to cement, is in general going to cost less. That percentage is going to vary based on where you're located within the world and where your raw materials are coming from. And also the ROI compared to, if you were to do stone and fabric, you still have the cost of that stone and fabric and the labor to install it. So is it going to cost more than that? Yes, it's going to cost a little bit more. Where the ROI of uniformity is where it really pays off. So go back to that. We're trying to get your loss down below 5% and down that 1-2% of saleable crop. So you're when you get your losses down, that's a huge ROI. Another benefit is that when you get to the floors and the uniformity of being extremely level, all of a sudden, automation becomes a very good option for growers. So if you're looking to use fork systems, conveyors, things of that nature, it plays very well with our floor.
Okay, so that's an element. Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't even thought of that. So the fact that it's all level, it's now like a factory floor. It's like a production line. It's no longer, oh, there's a swale in the land that we have to contend with when I got this rail system or anything like that.
Yep.
Do you get involved in that side too? Obviously, that's your background, agronomics and such. So do you get into that as Earthgood as well, into the automation side of things? Or is it, no, we just provide the foundation and that's an added benefit of having the Earthgood floors?
So, yes, we do. So, and we don't necessarily provide the product, but we can definitely help the grower in directing them to talk to suppliers that can provide that product.
So what I'm hearing is that the ROI is, it's not a cheaper product, but the ROI is in some of the automation that is now easier to accomplish, as well as you're getting a less die-off or less fallout or less, you know, you're getting a more through, sell-through or grow-through, I guess. For the products, and you have empirical studies as Earthgood that backs that up?
Yep. Yes, we do.
Interesting. And what do you hear your customers saying by and large in terms of that? Is that what they're noticing as well compared to what they used to use?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go to a grower that's using our floors and go there on the day they're shipping the whole bay. They're not, when they're done packing out of that house, there's not pots scattered and plants left behind or a product that's going to shipping that they're throwing in the dumpster. So it's very clean cleanup in most cases.
And that's that uniformity that's
yes.
to play there.
Yeah.
So let's shift into the water systems for a minute. And that's always what's intrigued me is I believe I've seen, you know, I've seen some of the work, the Earthgood floors that you have installed at Qualitree. I've seen mm-hmm. some of them working. And so you also supply the water and then take the water back and you know, Core or Jack or whoever it is, kind of explain that process to me in terms of, you said there's fertigating, you said there's other things going on there.
Would you like to take that one?
Yes, please.
before we make an installation, we ask the grower, what are your plans for now and what are your plans for the future? So we try to have the bigger picture, what may happen in the future. And that's important to how big your water basin is, what type of water you want to use besides the rainwater, if you have well water or other sources, what kind of recipes you need to fertilize your crops now and probably in the future, and what do you want to do with the drainage water. So we often advise to keep your clean rainwater as clean as possible. And with rainwater, make that a small part and reuse that quick. So when the drainwater comes back, reuse that for the next waterings. Then you can later on switch easy to other recipes and also use that for certain crops, higher EC levels. And for other crops, lower EC levels. So to think about the whole season, not only the rain season, but also the dry seasons, to think about how do you keep the water quality up level through the whole summer. And that's important to understand and to see how big the silos should be, how big the water basin should be, how big the pipe should be if you need ebb and flood. And then you need bigger volumes because 90% from the water you use comes back. And that needs bigger pumps, bigger silos, bigger valves. So in all aspects, you have to realize what are your future plans. And that is really where we challenge the customer.
And I can imagine that's a pretty difficult thing for some growers to do.
Sure. Yeah, we had some weeks ago, my colleague went to Sweden to a grower, and they have 10 years ago, they bought a piece of land of 70 hectares, and he had made plans all that time for exploring that. It cost a lot of time to get the license for using wells for to have enough quality water. And he has already made very concrete plans about buildings, greenhouses, Earthgood floors, etc. And we saw that there was some difference in level, in height level. And we asked him about it. And he said, I bought flat land. But we saw that there was a difference of 4 meters between the highest and the lowest point. And it took a while for him to understand it and to deal with it. Because he was so much fixed on his own plants. He overlooked that more or less. But it's something what we challenge, and also the future plants. It's not only water and not only floors, it is also logistics. That's so very important. How are the logistic lines in your company?
And do you get involved in that on a consulting level as well to say, okay, well, this is how you come in and pick up your plants, and this is where the shipping department is, and like you get, like that's what you mean by logistics?
Yeah. That's where, that's the questions we ask. We are not consulting like you should buy this equipment, but we ask. And when the grower is silent for a moment, that's the good question.
Even though you've hit gold.
We don't give the answers. We just give the questions to overthink. Yeah.
So just to back up a little bit, you talked about drain water being used first. Like, explain that concept to me in terms of why that's important. So you have fresh water coming out of wells,
yeah,
but you're also taking water back that's been used, and I presume rainwater as well.
Yeah.
So is there like a contamination piece there that you don't know what's in that water, or what's the methodology behind using that first?
Yeah, when you give water to your plants, you add nutrition to it.
Like a fertigation.
Fertigation. And that's expensive, and that's a certain recipe. And you want to use that fertigation as much as you can. So the sooner you get that water back without mixing it with the clean water, the better you can reuse that nutrition.
And do you test it then? Like, how do you know what's left in there? Like, what if some of the nitrogen has evaporated?
Yeah, you may normally when you give with ebb and flood, you get more or less the same EC and the same percentage of the nutrition in it.
Mean? Sorry, I'm not.
Electricity conductivity.
Okay.
That's a measurement for the amount of nutrition in the water.
So it's how conductive it is for electricity, and that's the particles of nutrition is
sure.
Yeah.
So the water you get back has more or less the same recipe from what you give. You add some more water and nutrition to it to make it 100% and give it back to the plants. But as plants need sometimes in a certain stage other nutrition schedule. For making flowers or grow better, you can change. And when all the nutrition is in one big pond and you use that water, reuse that water, you cannot change because there is a certain level of nutrition in it and it takes too long to change that recipe. So when you keep it in a very closed system and you reuse it very quick, then you can change easily the recipe later on.
So when you're applying a recipe, a fertilizer recipe, for example, to a floor, that drain water comes back to the same closed system, essentially?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, are you not then diluting what you're sending out, or is it, do you have multiple tanks doing that, or how does that all stay closed?
Yeah, you have multiple tanks, yeah, where you direct the water. For example, when you use it for outside, after watering the plants, you get the drain water back. But when it starts to rain, the first half hour, you need to take that water with more nutrition in it to the drain water reservoir. But after half an hour, the water is cleaner and has less nutrition in it.
It's diluted.
It's diluted. So you bring that water to another tank.
And so you're monitoring rain, you're monitoring all of that, or is that all manual that people are putting that in while they're flooding the floors?
No, you can do that by steering on EC level or time.
Okay, so you have these EC sensors that's then diverting the water.
Sure, yeah, to the right tank.
So that's why when you say we do water systems, I can imagine just technologically thinking of that system, that's going to be some a lot of programming, a lot of valves, and just a lot of flow.
Sure.
But I guess the Dutch are good at controlling water. They've been doing it for a lot of years.
We have some experience. And when we're making floors, we have unique products. And we also have quite a lot of patents on our developments, on our innovations. And with water technique, it's more difficult to have your own idea, your own distinctive way how you deal with it, because we buy the parts from some other suppliers. And for ourselves, we say we want to have it simple so that people understand what they are doing. So we make very clear drawings that people can understand what is really happening with the water, and that they can really follow what's going on. And also when we build that water system, we make it clear for everybody what is what. That is one part. Make it very easy and simple and understandable. It's not doing a trick, but growers who have to deal with it, or their employees, they understand what they do. That's one part. The other part is that we want always to have a backup, that in case there is a problem, that you can move to another part of that system and use that for that broken part, so that you always have a backup.
Redundancy, if you will.
Sure, yeah. Because when you are in water systems, you need to have a service. And from the Netherlands and also from other subsidiaries, we can serve the world, but not instantly. But when you have a backup in the system, it's much easier to solve it for the grower itself. And that's the second part. And the third part is it's also prepared for the future. That before we start to install, that we ask the grower, what are your future plans? And when you build a pump house or a water technical area, that it is big enough also for your future plans to have enough space for all equipment you need in the future.
Yeah, so you're future-proofing, so you know that, yeah, there's going to be another bunch of hectares or acres that are getting flooded.
Sure. Yeah.
Or we may need another pump, we may need another reservoir tanks.
Yeah.
And so you build the pedestals and all that stuff required, but
yeah,
then the technology comes later.
Yeah.
You raise an interesting point there about, you know, it's easy to read for the average person, and it's easy to lay out, and you make sure everybody understands it. How much of a transition is there from a grower that's just used to saying, oh, I'm just going to suck this fertilizer out of this tank, spread it all around, and it'll evaporate, and now suddenly they got to think about, oh no, it's coming back, and what do I do with it later? Like, how much of a difference in growing is there for the grower?
I'd say almost zero.
So is that how growers think already? Because they're usually not getting that water back.
The difference,
that's a new technology, obviously.
Well, it's not necessarily new technology. It's that they're getting the water back. They're getting the water back and they're reusing it, where they're not reclaiming it. It's just runoff. Okay, so they're just pumping more water out and it's running off. Here the water's coming back. When it's going back to the crop, we're amending it as it goes back to the crop. So it's just like they're doing a normal water cycle. They don't have to think about what...
So they don't have to plan their recipes in more rigid fashion because they got to think about, oh, I'm going to use this water again somewhere else?
No, because when they're setting up their nutrient packager or their nutrient program for that crop, if they're going to have a fertilizer change, they would do that anyway if they were doing a normal watering cycle. Okay, so when the water comes back, we're actually just reclaiming that water. And if they did make a change for the next watering cycle, we're going to amend that water or use a different tank of water to do that.
And is that then an automatic process of a tank? Like, do you know, saying, oh, we're using recipe 2, so maybe tank 5 will be better for this? Like, is that all automated then, or is that something the growers are thinking about?
Grower has to put some thought into it, because the grower does have to decide what recipe is going to those.
So they're still mixing the recipe. Yeah. So if they know that the recipe that they used is closer to the one they're going to be using, then they can divert it that way?
They could, but in most cases, it's just going to go back to the same tank.
Okay.
So if they're using recipe 1 when they water this cycle, then when that return water is going to go back to the recipe 1 tank.
Yeah. So what are some of the, obviously, I think there's some very obvious benefits of that type of a system where you're reusing water, there's less, like, is there a ratio that you use saying you're using this much less water, fresh water, because we're returning, or is that very environmental and contextual?
I think that's going to come down to the grower and how they apply their water. But what we can say is that when we do the ebb and flood system watering out there, it takes about 80% of the water is returned back to the tank. So
80%.
About 20% of the water is consumed by the crop and evaporation on average.
So without a floor like this, you're saying that 80% of the water would never be recovered?
Depending on the way that the water
was applied. But that's a number And so basically all the water that's landing outside the pots is getting recaptured. All the water that's going through the soil is getting recaptured as if the ones that doesn't evaporate and the stuff that's soaking through and such like that.
Exactly. So
that's like up to an 80%.
Yep. At 80% return.
Yeah. So I can imagine that. So, and the pumping systems and all that stuff, I imagine, are not costing that much then? Or what's the ROI on that? Is there a certain number of years you have to run this before it's like, okay, now your amount of water you're using that you're saving has now paid for the pumps and everything that's doing all this work?
It depends how much the water costs and how scarce the water is. In some areas, there is lack of clean water anyway, or you are not allowed to pump enough clean water. So then retaining more water is a key value. So it pays itself very easy and very quick. In areas where you have enough rainwater, enough well water, then it's more difficult to justify just the recapture of the water. It's also nutrition, and nutrition is also fertilizer are expensive nowadays, so that pays it back as well. And there is more legislation coming. In some countries, it's forbidden to water with fertilizer in the nature, so you have to reuse it anyway. So it comes from different sites.
I know that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was about to say, the one thing I will add is that any growing operation, you're going to have to invest in some sort of irrigation system. And that's kind of the way we look at it, is that, you know, you're going to have a water system, whether it's an ebb and flood system or all overhead irrigation. So as far as the ROI, it's kind of a sunk cost, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
So I guess, and maybe this is a hot topic, but being Dutch and us having a Canadian government that's kind of adopting the same approach, saying no more fertilizer or 40% reduction in fertilizer, is this seen as a boon to your industry, that this is something that you are prepared to handle because you're reusing it?
Yeah, we are used to this system and reused the fertilizers, it helps our business. But it is not our goal, because I think that making healthy plants, more uniform plants, less labor cost, that is more justifying than the legislation part of it. But it's all in the game.
Yeah, and I guess my question wasn't intended to be, oh, this is an opportunity. It's just, is this an opportunity where you are already set up to help the farmers and the agriculture,
yeah,
and the growers,
yeah,
that are getting hit with this legislation,
yeah,
definitely in the,
yeah,
Netherlands, if anybody's been following the news over the summer. The fertilizer is a big topic, and I'm not sure it's quite as big in the U.S., but in Canada here as well, fertilizer, you know, we, mm-hmm, seem to be following the same uninformed legislation of just cut your fertilizer.
Yep.
And produce more.
What people also, the politicians also understand, when it is possible, it's getting an obligation. So when you prove as a sector that it is possible and it's good for your footprint, then later on they you have to do it